need to tell them.
Oh, yeah. So you are talking about went down there and you have a Model T around 1913.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to talk about what happened in Chinatown or in Los Angeles or in Santa Monica.
Yeah, the conversion of the old Chinatown down there. They wanted to build a Union Station down there.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I forgot, I wouldn't dare to guess at the date
mm-hmm.
of when the Union Station was first thought of and or started to build
mm-hmm.
that structure. But they were clearing out the area, and the Chinese had to go someplace. So gradually, that whole area where the Chinese were living had to move someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it went up and started the new Chinatown up down Broadway and
hill.
Part of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then down in Central and Third Street, right in there, I think.
The
market area.
Okay.
They started down there,
uh-huh.
And then there's and then another area. They started another Chinatown. So the Chinatown is not concentrated like you would expect, you know, but it's scattered in a different area. So they say that isn't the right way to do it. So Eastman Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
Eastman of the Kodak Company offered to build a Chinatown for me if they would all concentrate in one area.
Mm-hmm.
So Eastman was going to put up 11.5 million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, that's a lot of money.
Oh, yes.
And $11.5 million to build a Chinatown from.
Mm-hmm.
With a wall around.
Uh-huh.
And the Chinese objected to the wall
mm-hmm.
because where are we going to run in case of fire
mm-hmm.
or what have you, and other disturbances. You know, the catastrophe. Where are you going to run? You run into the wall on all four sides.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a terrible thing. So they refused.
Mm-hmm.
Refuse the offer. So now, today, there are, I should say, several Chinatowns in
right.
Los Angeles.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So how did you learn about this Eastman Kodak?
Well, they talked about it, you know,
in Chinatown,
in Chinatown
down
yeah,
so
that.
You sort of
mm-hmm.
heard it from
mm-hmm.
the friends, and that's interesting. So, yeah, can we go back, you know, back to San Luis Obispo Chinatown? I remember yesterday you mentioned about the word gambling houses. Gambling houses.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
There are lots of gambling in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly, thinking about how many places there were in Chinatown.
You name them? Some of them?
At least three or four places
mm-hmm.
yeah, that, were, yeah, that would gamble.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why they moved from one place to another, except that, well, we got tired of operating,
mm-hmm.
So maybe they get tired of operating and then they close it down for the day, you
right,
know,
right, yeah.
For the time being. And then they go out and then they would go to another place, you
uh-huh.
know, maybe the head of the owner of the other place would say, well, I'll open up you come over here. Mm-hmm. So, okay, it'll give the word out, you know,
right.
They'll sing out the word and so everybody can hear. Oh, we go to
move it to another
to a certain
location.
Place, uh-huh. And then so they move to another place. When they get tired of that, I imagine they'll get tired of it by playing the same thing over and over and over again.
Uh-huh.
They move maybe a couple of 3 hours. They uh-huh. get tired and move to another place.
I see. So generally, where were these places?
Well, I spotted in Chinatown, you know, for instance, on the northwest side of the street,
mm-hmm.
there will be a...
What street is it?
This is on Palm Street.
Palm Street,
you know,
okay.
Northwest side or northeast side, or let's see, northwest and southeast side.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Two sides of Palm Street.
Uh-huh.
Or the main part of Chinatown is... situated,
mm-hmm.
and so some of those places, one of the back rooms will have a Santan game going, you know,
mm-hmm.
which the Chinese love to gamble,
mm-hmm.
and even in the Alu store, I remember when we were kids, they were playing cards, and they start up a card game,
mm-hmm.
going, and they'll go all night, see.
Mm-hmm.
All night, and by morning, my father would go down to order some food from the restaurant downtown to have sent up to feed these gamblers that
ah.
were sitting around the table, you know.
Uh-huh. So it's like a general store, in back of the general store will have
But this was in the front of the front part of the store, right in where we were today, you
uh-huh,
know,
uh-huh.
when you came to visit
the entrance,
today.
The yeah. major part of the front
major,
door.
Yeah. Mm.
Ah.
So set up a round table there.
How many people do they usually have at this one time, say?
You mean gambling?
Uh-huh.
Well, if it's a card game, you know, eight or ten people, or maybe more,
mm-hmm.
can sit around, and if they can't get in, well, they sit on the side,
mm-hmm.
and
so take turns,
I don't gamble, so I don't know what they were playing there, but most of the time they were playing either cards,
mm-hmm.
or Chinese dominoes.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And when they play Fantan,
uh-huh.
they go to these other places where it was set up for Fantan, because Fantan has a high table,
uh-huh.
a big table, so people can get around and play.
Mm-hmm. The Chinese domino is like a paigao.
Paigao,
okay.
Yeah, they have the little wooden blocks.
Wooden blocks, uh-huh.
Holes punched in.
Yeah. And so most of them are men, or were there women buying?
No women, no, strictly no women.
Mm-hmm. So these people were just gambling all day, all night, or certain hours?
Yeah,
or
maybe when it gets dark, you know, in the stores, would say, the merchandising part of the store is,
uh-huh.
is idle, you know,
uh-huh.
nobody buys. Well, time to set up a table and play a game. You
know? Uh-huh, uh-huh. So were some of these workers would come in town and play?
Well, that's where the thing comes in, you know, where these workers, the idle workers, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Wow.
So it's a working people, practically all working people, you know, either farm hands that came in from the ranches for the night, or idle people that were living around there waiting for something to happen, you know, and see if they can find any work around. So.
Do they drink while they play, while they gamble?
Mostly tea, you know, and of course they drink a lot of whiskey, you know, they we sell it right there at the store.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite handy for them. They say, oh, well, we'll open up a bottle of certain kind of liquor. So I don't know. I just assumed that they were quite potent Chinese
uh-huh.
liquor
uh-huh.
in those bottles.
Uh-huh.
And they don't get really drunk like we would assume that we call drunkards, you
uh-huh.
know. They don't get out of their mind. They know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
They know when to stop. That's the nice thing about the Chinese, you know. You don't find that Chinese that are actually so drunk that they don't know what they're doing or
uh-huh.
or laying down on the gutter or something.
Uh-huh.
You know? Never that far gone. They know when to stop.
Uh-huh.
They have sense enough to know when to quit, you know. I've had enough of that. I think I'll stay away from, you know, like that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Nice thing about the Chinese.
You know, I see.
That's what I admire about them.
And where do they eat? If they play all day or night, just eat the same place?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends. If they either eat with their friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, or either my dad would have somebody cook up a meal for him, you know, if he get tired or something. Or they would go back to their own abode, you know, where they...
And then would come they, return
yeah,
and
then
play, yeah.
Rest and when they're ready for some other... activities or they'll come up and do it over again, you know.
Uh-huh. In most of these stores, do they have this gambling going all the time or was this like a on and off things?
No, I wouldn't say most of the stores. I would say a few of the stores.
Uh-huh.
Few of the places that are set aside for gambling.
Mm-hmm. Do they do the other business as well or was just the gambling? The gambling is the most.
Yeah, they have one opium den that I know of that existed
mm-hmm.
For years.
Up to the turn of the century, or even later
oh,
years.
Oh, after the turn of the century, I forgot just one day. When was the law that came out restrict them?
And then they disappeared.
Just appeared and or do it on the quiet side.
Still, huh?
That, so they, nobody knows or ever hear about it.
Did you ever witness they smoke
yes,
opium?
Oh yes. We go into the opium dens.
Uh-huh.
There's no restriction about the kids going into the
uh-huh.
opium den.
Uh-huh.
But we used to... he's fascinated with the way they, not the way they smoke,
mm-hmm.
I don't mean that, but the way they, this operator
mm-hmm.
would fix the opium bowls,
uh-huh.
you know, and drill little holes in pieces of copper
mm-hmm.
to make the hole certain size for the smoke to go through. And then fit the pieces of copper into the ceramic bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Very clever. They do it in such a skill of doing it. We watch them. It's fascinating.
Is each individual smoke opium smoker had a special person prepare these things for them, or
no? This dealer, we'll say, this
uh-huh.
opium den dealer, we'll
uh-huh.
say,
operator.
He's the one that can fix the pipes and if they need fixing. And I don't believe he rents the space, you know, these opium smokers, they lay on a mat with a block for a pillow.
Uh-huh.
And then lay on the side and use an oil lamp for the little tiny flame to roll the opium on the end of a long needle like there, and make it in, roll it until it gets into a ball. Then he sticks the needle right through this little
hole
in the center of this bowl, and then stick it there, you see, and pull the needle out. Okay, a little wad of opium is on this bowl, you know, right on top of this little covering up this little piece of copper or brass. And then he holds it over the flame, and as the flame heat up this opium ball, it starts to bubble, and then and it causes a smoke, and then that's what he draws through the
pipe.
The bowl,
the bowl,
and through the pipe, and there's where he they get thrilled. And I imagine all things can happen. I guess when he gets inside, beauty and fantastic scenery, or you're in the heaven, whatever feeling it is, I don't know.
So like the opium then will have these mats, one after another.
Maybe
one next
four
to each
or six beds, you know, so maybe this opium then they have people on each bed.
And they do their own
there,
thing.
Smoking the pipe. And this fellow would dole them out with a little scale, weigh their opium.
And they the dealer sell the opiums, and you say not necessarily renting these beds. It's just the facility is there.
I suppose that whatever he collects for the opium is also the rental of the
it's
space.
There,
it's all taken care of in one deal. You know?
I see. Was there any prostitutes at that time here?
Oh,
in
yeah.
St. Louis,
not so much of the Chinese prostitutes. The English, I wouldn't say English, I mean, what I meant was the Caucasians, prostitute would come into Chinatown and perhaps rent one of the rooms and operate that way. But there wasn't any Chinese ladies in the whole community except what I can recall. My mother and Mrs. Chong, the one that I told you about, had
candy.
13
children.
That's
okay.
So there were only two Chinese women, and until later years, there a couple of others came in.
How about Jin family?
The Jin family, that's
Mrs. Chong?
Well, Miss Chong is the Jin family.
Oh, that's the same family, okay.
Yes.
So Most actually, these prostitutes were not Chinese, and they were Caucasian and come to town and
could be
do
other,
the business.
You know, Spanish or other nationality.
But a Chinese man would
would patronize them, you know.
Okay, so these gambling house and the opium dens are patronized by Chinese, or was any non-Chinese patronize these especially gambling house?
Once in a while, when I as a gambling house. I'm talking about the Chinese patronize their own, you know, places. They gamble in Chinese goods. But once in a great while, you'll find a Caucasian that knows a little bit about
Chinese
gambling, and they will come in and join in, you know, to catch on to how it was being played.
They, uh-huh.
And they're fascinated by the game, and they sit in,
uh-huh.
But not too often.
I
don't think I can name, in my lifetime, I don't think I can name half a dozen times that I saw
uh-huh.
a Caucasian mixed in with the Chinese.
Ah.
They seem to be all to themselves.
I see. Mm-hmm. Were there any like non-Caucasian, say, Filipino, Japanese, or?
No, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't that many Japanese and Filipinos or any of those Asiatic people around. There weren't there. I don't know whether they're in existence around this county or not,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but we don't see them around.
I see.
It's either Chinese or Mexicans or Spanish or Portuguese, you know, those people, they are around. But no
Asiatic
people.
I see. Uh-huh. So, well, we sort of jump back and forth, and if you don't mind, we probably start talking about start back into your childhood. We talk mostly about your father
mm-hmm.
and your families, and now we probably would like to know about your own experience as a childhood. When were you born? What year?
I think you
mentioned in the last interview.
I was born in 1893.
Uh-huh.
And that's quite some time ago.
Oh, yeah. And so
you
were born here in St. Louis Obispo.
I was born, we were, the whole family, our family, when I say family, I mean there were eight of us in the family. We were all born on the upstairs,
mm-hmm.
The top floor of the Alu's store.
Oh, I see.
That was our apartment, would you say, you know, for our living quarters.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Uh-huh, I see.
Because the upstairs were divided into about six rooms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One is a kitchen, one is a bedroom, my mother and father stayed,
uh-huh.
And the third one on the Choro Street side
uh-huh.
would be an altar where we worship,
uh-huh.
set aside
uh-huh.
for us to pray and worship in the Taoist belief.
Uh-huh.
And on the opposite, there's a hallway running through the center
mm-hmm.
Of the upstairs,
mm-hmm.
dividing two sets of rooms.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite side is one big room
mm-hmm.
For some children, and another smaller room for the older, us older people. You know,
mm-hmm.
that when I say older people,
mm-hmm.
I mean the oldest of the family, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
two or three of us sleeping in the same room.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think in the early days.
Crowded quarters.
Mm-hmm. And all the children were received by a midwife, or Chinese midwife, or an American doctor, or do you recall?
We have, when any of our brothers and sisters were born, we had American doctors to take care of my mother, you know. And we have hired midwives, you know, like, well, the one that take care of me when I was born, until when I was a few years old, was a Spanish
nurse,
like, you know, she take care of the washing and what have you, and take care of me. She just speaks Spanish, and I don't know just how my mother or either my dad, who neither one of them speaks Spanish, how they would get along with it. But somehow, you know, things happened that it amazed me how
the body language, they would, sign language,
get things going, you know, or understand each other. It's amazing. Just as much amazing to me as my dad was so
went into so many business,
limited English, we'll say, you know. It's not English, it's broken English mostly, you know. How he would get along and do the things that he does. It's amazing.
Yeah. So, did you attend school here?
Yes, I attended a grammar school up until the sixth grade. And then my dad needed me on the farm so bad that I wouldn't blame it on my dad why I quit school so much as when I was mad at the principal because he wouldn't promote me from the sixth grade to the seventh. So I dropped out on the end of the sixth grade.
What school was this?
It's one of the grammar schools in town.
Do you remember
called
the name?
Court School.
Court School, I see. So
there were only two schools in town. One is a mission school, and one is a court school.
So were you the probably one of the very few Chinese students at school? Was there any of these Chang?
The Chong family was going, one of the Chong family was going through at the court school. Court school is actually a combination of all the grades. You got eight grades plus two high school grades.
Oh, I see, I see.
Junior and senior in the same building, you see. So just a few students.
How many students in the whole school, actually?
Concentrate one class, you see. So,
how many of them then?
Well, there were, you can imagine, eight grades plus the high school in two floors of this school, which is not a large school. You imagine.
So you have like one classroom for eighth grades and the other classroom for the high schools?
They have, they're divided into each grade has its own classroom.
Oh, I see. Each grade does have, it's not like a one classroom, one room school. I see. So why did the principal will not promote you or, you know, get you to the high school? Was there any reason that he against you because you were Chinese or because you were?
No, I had it all figured out. He ran a summer school that he wanted pupils to go to his summer school to so that he can promote him to the next grade, you know. So I said, "Oh, you stinker! I wouldn't go to with you, you know." So I got mad at him. Well, there's no other school to go to, you know, except the mission school, which I have to walk half a mile. And so I put myself down on the farm to help my dad. And later years, when I was working at the theater, I was married then, and I never got paid when I was working for my dad. So I figured I better get out and earn my own living. So I went to work in a hotel and a dishwasher. And in 8 months' time, I was promoted to a second cook. I had a fancy, this is a swank hotel called the Andrews Hotel, which at that time was a swank hotel in the heart of town here. So